Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, Katie Weaver brings us the latest news related to what are called the Panama Papers.
The Prime Minister of Iceland, Sigmundur Gunnlaugsson, resigned Tuesday. On Monday, thousands of protesters had gathered outside the Icelandic parliament to call for his resignation. The opposition grew after a report that he and other world political and business leaders used their power and wealth to avoid paying taxes. The group Consortium of Investigative Journalists looked at 11 million documents belonging to Mossack Fonseca, a law firm in Panama. The firm helps companies and wealthy people set up foreign businesses to avoid paying taxes. A computer hacker got the documents from the firm's network. The reporters found nearly 130 current and former government leaders across the world, wealthy business owners, performers, and sports stars used the Panamanian law firm to avoid paying taxes. One report said a musician friend of Russian President Vladimir Putin had accounts with the law firm. The musician's name is Sergei Roldugin. The BBC said some records show Roldugin made hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. But another document shows that may not be the case. The document said the company is protecting the identity of the ultimate beneficial owner, the BBC reported. It does not say if the beneficial owner is Putin or someone else. A reporter who researched the offshore accounts said only a minority are illegal. Reporter Will Fitzgibbon said the problem is more about what is allowed by the laws of countries where these companies are created. He is one of the reporters looking at the law firm's records. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development works on stopping tax evasion. It was surprisingly upbeat about the leaked documents. Almost all governments are now working together to avoid tax evasion, said OECD Secretary General Angel Gurria. But an exception is Panama, where the Mossack Fonseca law firm is based. Panama is the last major holdout that continues to allow funds to be hidden offshore from tax and law enforcement authorities, Gurria said. Panama's president, Juan Carlos Varela, called for an investigation. The consortium's reporting shows people investing in offshore companies. Investments were made by the prime ministers of Iceland and Pakistan, the king of Saudi Arabia, and children of the presidents of Azerbaijan, it said. The consortium said 33 people and companies accused by the United States of illegal business opened offshore accounts with the Panamanian law firm. The charges against the 33 include doing business with Mexican drug lords, terrorist organizations, and two nations under international sanctions, North Korea and Iran. Among those found to have offshore accounts were former top government leaders of Georgia, Iraq, Jordan, Qatar, Sudan, Abu Dhabi, and Ukraine. In India, the Associated Press said 500 people were connected to offshore accounts. They include Indian superstars Aishwarya Rai Bachchan and Amitabh Bachchan. India's finance minister said those who did not declare illegal overseas assets by last year's deadline would face extremely costly penalties. In France, President François Hollande said the leaked documents are good news because it will help the government recover money hidden in offshore accounts. And in Australia, officials said they are investigating more than 800 wealthy residents for possible tax evasion related to offshore accounts. On Tuesday, Mossack Fonseca said it obeys all laws. The facts are these. While we may have been the victim of a data breach, nothing in the illegally obtained cache of documents suggests we've done anything wrong or illegal, the firm said in a statement. I'm Katie Weaver.
The value of Japan's money has been increasing on foreign exchange markets. That worries Japanese officials. Mario Ritter has more.
The Japanese yen has risen to its highest value in relation to the United States dollar in 1.5 years. The yen is increasing in value on foreign exchange markets. Yet Japanese finance officials have supported policies aimed at limiting its rise. The appreciating value of the yen could hurt Japan's efforts to increase inflation in the country. Some experts think rising prices could strengthen economic growth in the world's third-largest economy. Japan's money has traded at about 111 yen to one U.S. dollar in recent days. The yen has also risen in value against other major currencies, including the euro. The yen's value has increased almost 9% on foreign exchange markets this year. That is the biggest increase among the Group of 10 industrial countries during that period. The group includes Belgium, Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan. The Netherlands, Sweden, Switzerland, and the United States are also members. The Group of 10 has agreed to cooperate on economic and monetary issues with the International Monetary Fund. Japanese officials have said they may be willing to take additional measures to fight the rising value of the yen. Japanese Chief Cabinet Secretary Yoshihide Suga said the government is closely watching changes in foreign exchange values. The governor of Japan's central bank, Haruhiko Kuroda, has repeatedly said that the Bank of Japan may cut interest rates it controls. Demand for widely traded currencies like the yen often increases when stock prices drop. That can cause the value of such currencies to rise on international markets. However, the Bloomberg News Service reports that the currencies of commodity exporting countries like Australia and South Africa have dropped in value. Such countries sell a large amount of agricultural products and unprocessed minerals to overseas buyers. The Bank of Japan is seeking to raise inflation to a target rate of 2% a year. The bank has increased the amount of money available to private Japanese banks. The Bank of Japan also has set a negative interest rate for the money commercial banks hold with it. Both moves are meant to encourage banks to lend more to businesses and individuals. However, Japan's rate of inflation remains near 0%. That can be a sign of limited demand for goods and services. The Swiss franc has also increased in value against the U.S. dollar. That increases the cost of the country's exports and may hurt Switzerland's economic competitiveness. The president of Switzerland's central bank said his bank's policy of negative interest rates has been indispensable for limiting the rising value of the franc. I'm Mario Ritter.
People opposed to the government exchanged gunfire with police in the Republic of Congo capital of Brazzaville Monday. A police station and a government building were attacked in the Makele-Kele district of the city, according to the BBC. Violence also occurred in the Bakongo neighborhood of Brazzaville. The Associated Press reported that police battled militia fighters. Reuters news agency said that young male Congolese who opposed President Denis Sassou Nguesso battled police. There are no reports of injuries or deaths from Monday's shootings. A government official told the Associated Press the militia are known as the Ninjas. They take their name from an anti-government group in the 1998-1999 Civil War. The violence comes a month after Nguesso won re-election. Some accused him of massive fraud in the 2016 election. He ruled the Republic of Congo from 1979 to 1992. He won disputed elections in 2002 in 2009. I'm Jim Dresbach.
Researchers say they have conducted the world's largest obesity study. Ana Mateo tells us about their findings.
A new report says there are now more obese people in the world than there are underweight people. Researchers from Imperial College London wrote the report. Their findings were published in the British medical journal, The Lancet. The researchers examined health records from about 20 million people for what they called the world's biggest obesity study. Obesity is a condition in which the body stores large, unhealthy amounts of fat. Obese individuals are considered overweight. For the study, the researchers compared the body measurements of almost 20 million adults. They found that from 1975 to 2014, global obesity rates for men increased from 3.2% of the population to 10.8%. For women, it rose from 6.4% to 14.9%. They estimate that in 2014, there were 266 million obese men and 375 million obese women worldwide. That represents about 9% of the more than 7 billion people alive today. The study found that more than 2.3% of men and 5% of women are considered severely obese. A severely obese individual has a body mass index, or BMI, of over 35 kilograms per square meter. BMI is a way to measure a person's height compared to their weight. The study also found that about 1% of men and 2% of women are considered morbidly obese. Such people have difficulty with simple activities because they are overweight. The researchers say there are now 55 million morbidly obese adults worldwide. Majid Azati is the chief writer of the report. He works at the Imperial College School of Public Health. He writes that the number of people across the globe whose weight poses a serious threat to their health is greater than ever before. He adds that this epidemic of severe obesity is too extensive to be tackled with just medications. He says coordinated global initiatives are needed to tackle this crisis. These initiatives include looking at the price of healthy food compared to unhealthy food, or taxing high sugar and highly processed foods. The researchers warn if the problem of obesity worsens, 18% of men and 21% of women will be obese by 2025. The study found that China has the most obese people of any country, and the United States has the largest number of severely obese people. The researchers also studied the number of people who are said to be underweight in different countries. They said underweight levels have dropped from 14% to 9% among men and from 15% to 10% among women. About a fourth of the world's underweight people live in India and Bangladesh. I'm Ana Mateo.
This is What's Trending Today. It may be the month of April, but Americans are still talking about March Madness. March Madness is the nickname for college basketball tournaments each year. They start in March and end in early April. The men's game on Monday night for the championship was between the University of North Carolina and Villanova University, a school near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Fans are calling it one of the best finishes ever. But was it as good as the game in 1983 between North Carolina State and the University of Houston? Both games had surprise endings. Tense fans watched the final seconds, sitting on the edge of their seats. Both games featured last-second game-winning shots, and both games even featured teams from the state of North Carolina. In fact, both games were played on April 4th, but 33 years apart. The magazine Sports Illustrated has called the 1983 game one of the 100 greatest sports moments. In that game, North Carolina State was winning against Houston, which was the favored team to win. Houston had many players on that team who became professional basketball players. They were known for their exciting slam dunk shots. Those shots are when players push the basketball through the net with their hands,
very powerfully. But in the end of that 1983 game, North Carolina State won with a score of 54-52. The team made a basket with less than 1 second left on the game clock. The lasting image from that game was of North Carolina State coach Jim Valvano running around celebrating. Now on to this year's game. The University of North Carolina is one of the most famous college basketball teams in the United States. Legendary player Michael Jordan went there before starring in the NBA. North Carolina moved through the college tournament by winning 5 games by more than 10 points. Villanova was also a very good team this year. But going into the championship game, North Carolina was the favorite. Right after halftime, North Carolina was ahead by 7 points. Then, with 5 minutes left, Villanova was ahead by 10 points. It went back and forth in a duel for the win. With only 4 seconds left, a player from North Carolina made a difficult shot to tie the game at 74 points each team. There was 1 second left. Villanova player Chris Jenkins stood at the edge of the zone where a ball through the net is worth 3 points. He reached up with the ball and launched his throw to the net. His ball flew in the air as the time ran out and a loud buzzer filled the court. But a ball in play before the buzzer meant it could count if the ball successfully went in the net. Jenkins' 3-pointer sailed right into the net. He scored. Villanova became the college basketball champion for the first time since 1985. Even former North Carolina player Michael Jordan was impressed. But was it the best finish to a national championship game ever? People are still debating. And that debate is what's trending today.
As an English learner, you want to be able to understand and to discuss a subject. You want to have the ability to express your opinions and to support that opinion with a clear argument. You can learn these skills by learning how to debate. In everyday conversation, Americans use the word debate to talk about discussions among people. When people debate, they give their own opinions about a topic. Another use of the word debate describes a more formal discussion. Debaters work on a team to convince a judge that their opinion about a topic has more value than the opposite side's opinion. The National Speech and Debate Association says that students of debate research both sides of a topic. They learn to think critically about every argument that could be made on each side.
Debate is part of the tradition of forensics started in ancient Greece. The Greeks thought that in a democracy, people needed to have certain skills. These skills included speaking in public in favor of an opinion and providing evidence to support one's opinion. The Greeks supported the development of these skills by holding contests. Western education today continues the tradition with competitions between debate teams. A debate contest traditionally has this structure. Teams agree to debate a resolution, a statement, such as nuclear power should be banned. One team is the affirmative team in support of the resolution. One is the negative, against the resolution. Each team gives an argument for or against the resolution. Then each team asks questions about the other team's argument. After answering the questions, each team makes more statements to support their argument. Finally, they summarize the arguments. In a classic debate, teams may take 12 turns, in which one member of the team speaks. If you have never seen this kind of debate, you can imagine that it is a difficult activity, even for native English speakers.
Professor Charles LeBeau teaches English and debate in Japan. He says that many English teachers in Japan did not think their students could take part in a debate. The teachers had no experience with debate, and they thought it was too difficult for their students. Instead, they focused on teaching presentation.
There is a huge gap between presentation, which is mostly a one-way experience, and then we have something on the other end of the spectrum, which is discussion. The problem with discussion is that there's no real clear exacting format.
Mr. LeBeau says that most people mistake debate as being mostly a speaking skill. But debate is a more natural kind of discussion than what happens in those classrooms. That is because debate requires understanding the other person's opinion.
The nice thing about debate is debate leads towards a more natural discussion. First, I give my position, then you give your position, and then I would address each of the points in your position and comment on them. And then you would have the opportunity to address each point in my position and comment on it.
Charles LeBeau wrote a book with Michael Lubetsky called Discover Debate to help teachers understand a simpler way to teach debate. The method depends on creating a kind of visual aid known as a graphic organizer. The visual aid reflects the way we talk about critical thinking and developing an argument.
Mr. LeBeau says,
I think an easy way to visualize the metaphor is as if it's a house. A house has a roof and usually has some sort of pillars or supports, and then there is a concrete foundation.
Students work with the idea of building their argument just like they would build a house. They would draw their house on paper or a whiteboard and list. The focus of the discussion or the debate is the roof. The reasons and arguments are the pillars to support the roof. The data, numbers, examples, and expert opinions provide the concrete foundation. The house metaphor helps students who have not experienced a debate in their own culture. It gives students a way to plan what they will say to support their message. As many nervous speakers know, having a visual aid is very helpful when speaking in public in a second language.
In a sense, they're presenting the house. They're giving the audience a tour of the house. It's not just a bunch of words. There's something concrete and visual that is the center of the debate.
In part two of our series next week, we will introduce the kind of debate topics that work well for English learners. Mr. LeBeau will also introduce tips for organizing a debate in a large class and judging arguments. In part three, we will explain the reasons for learning to debate in business as well as the academic world. We will discuss how debating gives students a better understanding of Western culture and lets students practice critical thinking. For the VOA Education Report, I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.